TFM.
Welcome back, everyone, to Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how does it feel to be back in the saddle?
Well, I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend, where the lone... Oh, you weren't talking about the Gene Autry song. Sorry.
No, and you must not be in Gorn space if a friend is a friend.
That's true. No, I wasn't in Gorn space. But honestly, it feels a little weird to be back. It feels a little weird because it's honestly been way too long since we've been in the mm-hmm. Strange New Worlds universe. You know, a lot of things got in the way. But I think... They've got to work on getting television for streaming services back to like manageable time lengths between seasons.
Yeah.
This was too much.
Well, this was it's a good 2 years, right? And some things happened. I think the writer's strike interfered a little bit and all, but mm-hmm. generally speaking, yeah. very quickly, since we're on the topic, not just Strange New Worlds, but as you say, TV in general, streaming TV,
yeah.
I think has given creators a license. They feel like it's fine to just get around to it whenever yeah. they yes. want. And
like, seriously, how long have we been waiting for yeah. Stranger Things? Those people are literally adults now. We've
right.
been waiting
the characters
so long.
Don't even match up anymore, right, to when that started, so... All right. Well, maybe that'll be another podcast in the future yeah. about the the lag in streaming. But today we're going to get back into Strange New Worlds with season 3. The first episode of season 3, Hegemony Part 2. And here's a quick rundown of the story. With part of his crew abducted in cold blood and orders to stand down and stay on the Federation side of the demarcation line, Captain Pike must balance duty as a Starfleet officer with duty as a leader responsible for the lives under his command. As La'an, Ortegas, Mbenga, and Sam Kirk fight their way out of the Serpent's Den, Spock and Chapel prepare for some unorthodox surgery to save Captain Batel's life, while Uhura and Una hatch a plan to rescue their kidnapped crewmates. After preparing for ramming speed, the Enterprise punches back at the big lizards in their backyard and uncovers a surprise in another battle at the binary stars. The ultimate solution? Put the lizards to sleep and kick the can down the road. Sound familiar? So Matthew, why don't we just jump right in with picking up the story. As we just said in the opening, it's been a couple of years since we got any new episodes. So for the actors, there was a big gap as well. Playing the characters, also for the designers. I felt like they did a really good job here of connecting part one and part two visually in terms of the characters as well, making it feel like a continuation of the story, even though mm-hmm. a much longer gap went by than we would have had in any past Star Trek cliffhanger like
right.
this.
Yeah, I mean, it feels pretty continuous in the sense that there's not too much that feels out of place. If you're Eagle Eye, Uhura's hair is different, obviously because she's grown it out for the new season, and so they've had to give her a skull cap, and it doesn't look quite the same mm-hmm. as it did in those episodes. You know, there's some little things like that. But I think on a whole, coming in the sense of picking up the story and just continuing it with the continuity of what things looked like, I think all that's fine. I will say a couple of things, though. One, because we have waited so long for this, there was a difficulty in me like almost caring about this part two
mm-hmm.
because like we already know they're picked up through season 5, okay, like nothing mm-hmm. major is going to happen here. Nobody's probably going to die,
right?
You know, and so because we've been waiting so long, it really kind of ruins some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And even just coming into the episode as well, I would say one of the things I notice is that I don't love, just because you can move the camera like a madman in mm-hmm. space, because all of this is digital, doesn't mean you should do that. Mm-hmm. And I think Strange New Worlds has a predilection for thinking it's very cool to spin you around.
Right?
It's not, guys. Just stop it. It's not. At the very beginning of the episode, they were doing a lot of that. And then, they do it when they zoom in into the Gorn ship later on. And so there are too many times in this episode where that happened. So, but even just at the beginning, it was like, okay, you don't have to try and wow me like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would rather the visual effects be interesting enough for me to look at without you feeling like you also have to do a ton of weird camera movements to make them even more interesting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, if you think back to movies like First Contact, even, which had a lot of special effects and, you know, environmental things going on, they didn't feel the need to do that kind of thing, right? So I think you still feel the action. It still feels dynamic without what you're describing. I especially notice there are times in Strange New Worlds where the Enterprise moves like it's a video game. Right, like it doesn't move like you would expect a ship of its size and its design to move. Mm-hmm. And so that's another case where I think, it doesn't connect with what we expect from the Enterprise.
Yeah, but I agree.
Yeah, you know, it's science fiction TV these days. This is sort of how things are made. So,
well, and the other thing about that is I think being judicious with all of that helps you kind of build in the audience's mind the gravity of the situation. So instead of like whizzing me all around, allowing me to kind of be able to take in the spectacle of what the Enterprise is facing is much more impactful as an audience member rather than me not being able to focus on anything long enough to kind of get a sense of what is truly happening in the visual effects. And you know, that's one of those things. Like when you brought up First Contact, I think that's a great example. There are a lot of places where they do some really cool camera movements in there, but most of those camera movements have to do with building this kind of ominous nature. And especially you think of the whole beginning of the movie where you have the big pullback, right?
Oh, right.
Yeah. All of that, you know, all that stuff is actually building the sense of horror. It's building a character moment for Picard. You know, you're utilizing it for a reason. Here, it's just like, well, wouldn't it be cool if...
Yeah.
And so...
Well, on a positive note here, I think one spot where they do it well to deliver what you're talking about, where you can see the scope of what the Enterprise is facing, is when they're near the binary stars and then the Gorn come back out and all the little ships start swarming towards the Enterprise heading for Federation space. That's a moment where they do keep us locked in on the view screen.
Yeah.
And we actually can see the scale of the invasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Much better done. I agree.
That's a style that I think they should stick with, that type of style more often, because that captures the atmosphere in a way that's easier to follow. Because I watched this one a couple of times and I still don't really have a clear view of the Gorn ships and kind of what these things look like, because they move so quickly in space and they're cutting so much. And the Gorn as well, like we'll talk about it in a moment, but when they're on the Gorn ship in the digestive center, whatever they call it, when the Gorn attack them, for most of that scene, I can't really get a good look at the Gorn. And I know that they've spent a lot of creative energy crafting the look of the Gorn.
Sure.
But you don't get to see it on the screen because everything is just moving too quickly and the scenes are cut too quickly.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. And I think another thing, you know, when we just talk about kind of picking up the story, this, again, I think the thing that this episode has to deal with, aside from the same thing any two-parter has to deal with, you know, you think of the best two-parter with it, you know, best of both worlds, that you have to keep us interested, you have to keep us grounded in where you were beforehand, and you have to keep us invested then in the story, and then your solution to the story has to be something that feels like it kind of lives up to the first part. And so that is the other thing that they are legitimately in this episode, I would say, behind the eight ball. They're between a rock and a hard place here, and that is because of the time that we've been waiting to watch this. And that's not, I mean, obviously, that's not the writers of this episode's fault, right? You know, sure. There's much bigger things that are at play here that they have no control over. But I just, when we talk about picking up the story, as an audience member, you kind of have to bring me back into this as if, yeah, I haven't had a chance to rewatch the last episode, right? You have to make me care. And I will say that this, it was a very large mountain for them to climb, I think.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I remember when The Best of Both Worlds first aired, and I remember that cliffhanger and being shocked, like, what? What's going to happen? And then waiting the whole summer and then finding out. And there are differences here. One of them is that we didn't know if Picard was going to come back. We legitimately thought there's a chance that Patrick Stewart's leaving the show and he won't be back.
Exactly.
So that was a possibility. Whereas here, we already know Pike is going to die 10 years from, he's going to essentially die 10 years down the road. So nothing's going to happen to him. Like you said earlier, we know the show's been renewed for two more seasons. So we know that probably nothing's going to happen to any of the main characters, right? So there's not that to worry about. And also, the passage of time between the end of season two and now in the real world, we've all just kind of, however invested we were in what's going to happen. You know, I went back and I rewatched Hegemony before watching part two. And then I remembered that, yeah, well, what's going to happen? Like, I'm sure they're going to get the people back, but how are they going to do it? Right. Yeah. But I haven't spent the last 2 years thinking about this. You know, I've moved on to other things. And so, like you're saying, that's a steep mountain for the writers to climb to get you reinvested in it as soon as you start
watching. I couldn't agree more.
Part two. And then the other thing here, we can shift to another subject, sort of. I mentioned the Gorn. I call this part Gorn Your Own Way, you know. That's Lindsey Buckingham telling them,
you can go on your own way. Go on your own way.
Yeah. So,
I wonder what it means to go on your own way.
I don't know. So. Maybe if we can go back to the Enterprise D when Mick Fleetwood comes on, we can ask him and maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
anyway, just again, as we jump back into it, your thoughts on how they are using the Gorn in the storytelling.
Yeah.
Which we'll come back to at the end when we get to the end of the episode. But
Okay. There might be some people who are going to be a little frustrated by my saying this. But I honestly think it's pretty lazy. And the reason I say that is because what they have basically made the Gorn in this series, they've made them the Borg. And that is not interesting.
Yeah.
Because they're just not doing anything interesting with these characters that should be interesting. And I think would be really fascinating to look, you know, when we think of the best of Star Trek and the best villains in Star Trek, you know, Deep Space Nine did not try to recreate the Borg, or they created a completely different type of villain that is as terrifying as the Borg, but it's not the Borg. And so I think here the real issue becomes is just that I'm not actually that interested in the Gorn, because they haven't really given me a reason to be interested in them other than the fact that they're this almost like unstoppable force. And I think, you know, that is a bad choice on their part. Mm-hmm. And because what they needed to do is, you know, when we see the Gorn in Arena, that Gorn is much more interesting and seems to have much more of a inner life, you know, and mm-hmm. feels more like a real character. Mm-hmm. I mean, these just feel like CGI monsters. That is a complete disservice to the characters, and it's a complete disservice to the series to not really give me anything to gravitate towards, like wanting to really know more about the Gorn, because you haven't given me any reason to want to know more. I just kind of want you to be done with this story, and we can hopefully move on from here, because I just don't find them interesting.
Yeah, all we've basically seen them do so far is growl and chase people.
And try to eat our favorite characters,
try to eat our favorite characters. So,
lunchtime!
You know, the thing for me is, when we initially saw Gorn on Strange New Worlds, we were seeing these hatchlings, and they're just completely like little monsters. And it's okay if you explain that that's how they are when they're babies, but then they mature into adults that think and reason and behave in a way that we could identify with them, and hopefully we could sympathize with them in some way, even if we're not supporting them, but at least you can look at things from their perspective. I think, like, you need that to actually tell a real story between the Federation and the Gorn. And we never get that. And here, even when we see an adult Gorn, it's just like, you know, it's like a alien or Godzilla or something, right? It's not a rational being. And then when you see their spacecraft flying around and all this, you wonder, like, how did that species develop all of this technology? Because it doesn't connect at all. It's just like a generic science fiction, a space horror type thing.
Yeah, truly do feel like they're just like aliens from Alien. You know, so.
And speaking of them being like the Borg, I think it's an even better analogy than the one I had been thinking about, which was about the storytelling. But it is true, the Gorn, as we see them here, they're very much like the Borg drones before Voyager, so like Next Generation era Borg drones, which are just this kind of unstoppable, very frightening force that you can't reason with and you can't talk to, and they're just out to get you. And yeah, they're very much like that. I felt like the sequences with La'an and Erica and Mbenga and Sam Kirk trying to escape from the Borg. See, I said Borg there. Trying to escape from the Gorn ship. It felt a lot like in The Best of Both Worlds, where they're roaming around on the Borg cube. You know, a lot of the time is very quiet for them, even in this Gorn thing. It wasn't until the Gorn actually come after them that it became an action sequence. And then if we just jump ahead to what I had further down the outline, from a storytelling point of view, it almost feels like they just tried to recreate The Best of Both Worlds with this two-parter, because what is their solution? Their solution is they put the Gorn to sleep. There's an invasion headed for Earth. And how do they stop the invasion? They put the Gorn to sleep. It's exactly the same thing that they did to the Borg in The Best of Both Worlds. And the only reason, well, I'm not going to say this is a reason that I like it, but from a writing standpoint, I feel like they realized that we cannot continue with this Gorn war story if the series is going to lead into the original series. And the creators have now said that season 5 will end with Kirk in command. So they're very much trying to lead us now directly into the original series. So they know, like, we have to put the Gorn to bed. It's bye-bye Gorny. And they found a way to do it. And then Pike tells Una that, we put him to sleep, but I can't help but feel that we've just push this down the road, you know, for someone else to deal with, which is essentially the writer's way of saying, okay, we're done. And then Kirk will meet the Gorn captain in Arena. They're going to be asleep until that happens. And it might seem like a tidy way to just write yourself out of a problem, but it still doesn't connect. And you've still got the problem of, because now you've got Scotty as part of the crew as well. So when you get to Arena, you've got Uhura, you've got Spock, you've got Scotty. They've all had this traumatic experience with the Gorn, and yet no one has any idea what's going on. And and of course, in the real world, yes, Arena was written 50 plus years ago. Of course, it's not going to connect. But I think as a writer today, you need to try to make it connect. And I don't feel like they've actually tried to do that.
Okay. So we've obviously had this discussion many times. Yes, we have. You know, we can stop pretending that this is in the Prime universe again. We just don't even need to talk about that. And so to me, what this comes down to is, okay, how does this work as a two-parter and a solution to the problem? Mm-hmm. And if there's anything that is super lazy in this episode, and I do mean super lazy, is literally doing the exact same thing that you did in The Best of Both Worlds, which is the best two-parter Star Trek has ever done in that sense, right? That's the hallmark, right? Everybody knows it, and they just don't come up with anything original here.
Yeah.
And that is a detriment to this episode. It's a detriment to the Gorn War. And I think, like you mentioned, it does feel as though, you know, they know that they're going to be able to come back for a fourth and then a smaller fifth season, so they can wrap this series up. Which means they don't actually have as much time as they thought to play with this Gorn story, which basically feels like what they did with Enterprise in season 3, right? We'll just throw Nazi aliens and see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
Except again, this doesn't even feel as interesting as that, because
well, at least that was somewhat original.
Right? Yes, we've legit already done this before. Yeah. And so It is frustrating, because really the only truly, I think, interesting part of this episode is the solution to try and save Batel.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt very original, by using the Illyrian DNA. Mm-hmm. And that's the storyline that I ended up caring about, because it was actually a character storyline.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the way it's affecting Pike in command, and the worry that basically the love of his life is going to die, and that there's nothing he can really do about it. He just has to trust that Chapel and Spock will be able to figure this out, because she has a very short ticking clock. I thought all of that stuff was really great, and their out of the box solution was good, and so that was actually really truly the only interesting part of this episode, because everything else just kind of felt like bad action movie or a rehash of a better Star Trek episode. And this is where they actually keyed into real character moments and real storytelling that was, we want to talk original. Okay, we've never played with Illyrian DNA before like this, and seeing this kind of thing happen. So I thought all of that was really interesting, and especially since, yeah, they're kind of playing with that whole alien concept of they grow inside of you and then they hatch and then they eat you because they're hungry. Like, talk about terrifying, you know? So, like, all of that was the stuff where something interesting happened.
Yeah. Well, and it's also interesting because it wasn't out of the blue. It's already well established.
Right.
The Illyrians, how their DNA works, Una's role. Then there's the personal connection. And I thought that Marie's little reaction at the end when Pike tells her Una helped was really nice, because it's very short, very subtle, but it ties back to the whole fact that Batel had to come to the Enterprise and arrest Una, and then she had to actually take part in the trial, even though she was not, she didn't want to have to kick Una out. But at the same time, she also knows that you know, it is against regulations to modify DNA like that. And now she has that DNA in her own body, and she's a captain. So there could be repercussions later her because of that.
And one of, I think, the most interesting parts about this, right, is the fact that, like Una said, this mission is off the books.
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to ask any questions? So it was a kind of like a wonderful, and I thought kind of ingenious way to, again, it's like the writers were really kind of thinking through the ramifications of that, like you just said, and actually giving us some interesting, legitimate reasons as to why this can easily stay hidden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't let us know on whether or not the Illyrian DNA in her body will stay there for the rest of her life or whatnot. And so, you know, and anything else where we would talk about on that front would definitely be just like speculation. But just the fact that the way they saved her life, it's like, oh yeah, this doesn't have to be in the logs because this whole mission isn't on the books. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was like, again, I was like, this is great. We're creating a really interesting solution to this problem. You know, again, you got two characters who are getting then to work together that obviously are kind of in a very precarious position themselves with their own relationship. And so all of that I thought was just like, this is what I was kind of like hoping for with this storyline, that I would get more of this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really glad that we did. So
yeah. Well, another thing they didn't let us know is maybe they've got a little nursery over in the corner of sick bay
they've
got the three little baby Gorn that they got out of her.
Yeah.
Maybe they're nursing them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
yeah, I can see like little lizards, the little bottles with milk, you know, Mbengas over there. Yeah. So let's also talk about Spock and Chapel, because in the midst of what's going on in their relationship, they have to work together. They have to put that aside, and they have to work together in a very short time frame to find a solution to save Batel. And, you know, we were talking on the other side of the stable, and you said that you really wanted a little bit more character exploration between them and their relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hard part about this is like, I know what comes next too, right? And so what I think that
that's
they're
a hard
really,
part with so much of this series, right?
Yeah. But there's a real disservice, I think, that happens to these two characters by the fact that they don't get more time in this episode to have any kind of discussion. This also feels like a place where the writing is rushed. Because when we get into the next episode, I think it's even worse. We have really rushed this storyline, and a storyline that, you know, I thought they've been really building, right? For the first two seasons, this whole relationship between Spock and Chapel as they kind of explore this, and then it gets shut down at like the snap of a finger, basically. And it feels as though we as fans deserve more than that. And especially in this episode, I think that there should have been more time given for them to be able to maybe have a better heart to heart than what we get. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because I think this episode starts to kind of put Chapel in a bad light, because, you know, Spock has put himself out there and basically what we're getting from Chapel is she's kind of gotten scared about this relationship and she's running away, and she barely gives him anything in this episode. And then in the continuation, the next episode, I think just compounds that issue. So it is frustrating because just as a viewer, I feel like I owed more with this relationship than I'm getting, especially in this episode where, you know, the next thing that's going to happen is she's going to leave for 3 months, and this is really the only conversation that they get, especially after she almost died and the impact that is apparently, I mean, we see it, that it's had on Spock is just, for him, this is legitimately life-changing, what has happened to him, the emotional reaction he's had to her almost dying. And there's just almost zero time given to it, which is a little bit sad.
I think one thing that impacts Spock in that respect, and it's something that I know a lot of fans think is silly and probably shouldn't be in Star Trek, but I think the fact that time-wise in the story, Spock is only a couple of years removed from his sister dying. And so he lost someone who he cared about, and now he almost lost Chapel, who he cares about. And so if you think of it in terms of, you know, forget about Star Trek canon and whether you think Michael Burnham should have been Spock's sister or any of this stuff. If you just think about it, if you were in that real world and Spock's a real person, that would obviously have an impact on him, because he would have this trauma that he just lost someone who was very close to him. And then he almost lost someone else who's very close to him. And then now that person that he almost lost doesn't even want to talk to him about it. Yeah, that would have a lot of impact on someone.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those places, especially for, you know, the series talking, as we mentioned, talk about the whole canon question or whatever. But, you know, in the canon of this universe, Spock did have a sister, like you said, who just died. And so I think we absolutely need to be able to give more time for this character and what happened here. And then what we're going to get between those two characters. They deserve more.
Yeah. So as far as Chapel goes, a couple things for me here. First of all, I actually think that they're being pretty true to the character that they created, because she has been pretty clear from the start that she's not serious about relationships. She has trouble in serious relationships or being close to people. She doesn't want to talk about emotional things like this. She wants to kind of ignore them or run away or be closed off. So I think her not wanting to talk about it, I mean, she says in here, I don't even want to talk, right? That's who she is. I don't think that that's really them rushing the writing or changing the nature of the character. I think they're actually being pretty true to who they created.
I'll agree with you in this episode.
In this episode, yeah.
Yeah, not the next episode.
So we'll talk about that one next. But the other thing that I did appreciate in terms of the writing and the presentation here, compared with Discovery, is that Spock and Chapel are in a situation where the clock is ticking. They don't have much time to solve a problem. Someone's going to die if they don't solve the problem. They need to focus on the task at hand, and they do it. We get a little bit of dialogue between them. They at least acknowledge that the situation's going on. They talk briefly, and then they get the job done. Compared with Discovery, where massive emergencies are happening, and then characters will just stop and have like complete emotional meltdowns and deep, deep discussions with each other.
Sure. Yeah.
In situations where they need to set that aside and deal with it later and solve the problem that's at hand right now. Now, they ultimately do solve the problem because it's a TV show. So basically, the writers can suspend time while they have the conversation as if time isn't passing.
Right.
You know, and balance it all out. But here, I think it was a more realistic and appropriate way for two people to handle the situation.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're 100% correct in all of that. And I think they do handle it well in that sense of that they can't spend, you know, all of this time having a huge conversation. So the fact that they have a very quick conversation, I think the problem is you're not beholden to time on a streaming show. So this episode can be longer. So the end of this episode could have been a moment between those two. And so I think that's the place, you know, when I'm talking about this, I think being able to have a moment like that at the end of the episode would have been wonderful, and it would have been actually smart for the series. And just the season, especially, again, keep referencing, but we're going to go at next episode. So.
Yeah. Okay, so if we forget about the next episode, because we know what happens in the next episode, just this episode itself, I actually kind of like the ending and like that they don't have a conversation again at the end. I think that the way they're looking at each other, and then Pike comes, and then Chapel talks to Pike for a second, and then she turns and Spock's gone, and you see the look on her face and all. I think it's pretty powerful to leave you wondering what's really going on in her head. And the other thing that I think is that, like we just talked about earlier with the writers realizing that we can't continue on with this whole Gorn war thing because it doesn't actually make any sense for what we know comes down the road. I think here too, they know that the Spock Chapel thing can't continue either. And I think that they're writing the story as we saw it in this episode as a way of just pushing the two of them apart. And we're seeing that like, this isn't going to work for either one of them. And I think Spock is realizing it now as well. Now, of course, knowing what comes in the next episode, they kind of revert a little bit in terms of what I'm saying here. But in this moment at the end of Part two, I felt like, oh, I see they're going to wrap this up.
I would disagree in that. I don't think that the episode does a good job of helping us to have any idea of where Spock is, other than it seems pretty clear he doesn't want this to end. He doesn't want her leaving, and he doesn't want all that stuff happening, which is, you know, why he says what he says.
But I feel like he also realizes that that's probably what's going to happen, and he's kind of coming to terms with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's leaving for 3 months. So,
right. Exactly. Yeah. She's leaving for 3 months. Yeah. And I think, even in this episode, we end up with her being like, don't do something romantic and like, wait for me. Which, you know, I just really cringed at that line.
But that's totally her character from the start.
Yeah. I get that it's her character, but I feel like she, what's interesting is, but I feel like she's become a less likable character because these type of people are really, and this is the biggest thing. Chapel is ultimately an incredibly selfish character.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been much more interesting to me for her to have grown to be a less selfish character than reward her selfishness. I don't enjoy watching selfish characters, you know, not actually learn and grow. I mean, like that's most of our media tends to be about, unless it's Seinfeld, where they never learn anything. the rest of media is really about selfish characters tending to learn to be less selfish and more selfless, or they suffer the consequences of that. So for my personal viewing of this character and this story, that's the thing that I get, I guess, just somewhat frustrated by with her.
Well, they might be taking her down that road to
maybe
turn her around later, because we know that that's not who Chapel is in the future. So, and I know that you're convinced that this is an alternate timeline, and it does feel like an alternate timeline, but the creators still are seeing this as it's the prime timeline and it's going to lead into TOS. And if they do feel that way, and that's part of why I feel like they're writing the Gorn out now, and they're also trying to get out of this Chapel Spock relationship. If they do feel that way, then at some point between now and the end of season 5, they're going to course correct these characters. So,
irreparable damage that they've done to Kaminin is insurmountable. It just legitimately cannot be fixed. And so I always try to just approach this show on its own terms.
Mm-hmm.
And so in its own terms, I think I will be interested to see whether or not they take Chapel and they make her a more sympathetic and kinder, less selfish character. But I'm not under any illusions that that is going to happen, because they seem to be playing very fast and loose with everything. And so, which is fine, but, you know, it just makes her a character that's just not as exciting to watch at the moment, and kind of like more painful to watch because she's just not very nice.
Yeah. Well, one other character that I'm enjoying, I don't know how you feel, is I'm actually enjoying Martin Quinn as Scotty. I think his take on the character is interesting. It's interesting to see Scotty, who we know as being this confident miracle worker in the future, being more unsure about himself and kind of finding his feet. And also, I think it's kind of cute how they're sort of positioning Pellia as being the inspiration for some things that we know about Scotty in the future, like maybe what she tells the captain here about this thing's going to be ready in time. And then she tells Scotty in here also that with too much time on your hands, you fall apart, but put a phaser to your head and voila. And it sounds like she sees something in him that he doesn't see in himself yet, but the Scotty that we know from the original series and all the films is that person that she's describing. And so I think it's kind of interesting to like kind of add that little bit of texture there. I saw some comments about the two of them together, and I thought it was interesting that one fan said that they're not sure whose accent is worse here, Pellia or Scotty. And I was thinking that, okay, I get the Pellia thing because, yeah, she just made up an accent for this character. But Martin Quinn, that's actually his real accent. In fact, he normally doesn't use his real accent when he acts. And here, that's just Martin Quinn. Yeah. He's Scottish. He's the first Scot to play Scotty. And he's just using his regular accent. And apparently some fans think that he's making up a fake accent to try to sound like James Doohan Scotty, which I think that's a little strange.
I've got no problem with his accent. I think it's fine.
I know a lot of Scots, you know, here in Tokyo, and that's Scottish.
And so, and I think he's fine as the character too. And I don't necessarily have a huge issue with him being on the show, but I also think that Scotty is taking away from the show. I mean, why aren't we just allowing Pellia to be a character in her own show? Yeah. And we're spending all this time. And that's really my main frustration. I think that, again, you can come at me, whatever, but I think it's lazy writing to start trying to shove all of the TOS things into this show when it's not necessary, especially because, again, if you actually cared about canon, none of these characters are on this Enterprise. We already know that because we saw the cage, and none of these characters there except for Spock. He's the only character that should exist on this show.
Well, Una.
There shouldn't be a chapel. There shouldn't be any of these things. But they've made the decision, again, and this is why I'm fine with it, to just do what they want to do and create their own universe to play in. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. But I still do think that Scotty himself and these other TOS characters are kind of taking away from the characters they created for Strange New Worlds. I would much rather get to spend more time with Pellia as a character and really, you know, advance her as a character, get to know more about her. Or if they had kept Hemmer, which I know they always said, you know, they said that he was always going to die in the first season. So, but again, you bring in Pellia, and I think that's fascinating and fun, a type of character we've never really seen before in Star Trek. There's no need to add.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing that's a little bit frustrating with Strange New Worlds is there are too many characters.
Well, and they've added more, right?
Yeah.
Not just Scotty, but they've added a couple of more characters here.
Yes.
You've got Erica's brother, you've got the new nurse. So,
So, and it's like, why? And a bartender, why are we doing apparently? This? Yeah. Why are we doing this? So.
Yeah. 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 Well, we'll see how much they use Scotty this season. If they gradually transition from Pellia, it might work. I think For me, it's not so much lazy writing. I think it's tricky writing because they've always had this vision that they were going to use this show to lead into the original series, and therefore they've got to add the characters along the way so that they can finally get the whole band together. And so how do you do that? And so by the very nature of doing that, you're going to be bringing in characters that the viewers are very familiar with who are going to take away from the original characters.
Yeah.
By nature. Yeah. I do think it's interesting to me the way that they encounter Scotty and the way they bring him aboard the ship, because it's sort of similar to the first J.J. Abrams movie and how Kirk runs into Scotty in that movie as well. It's just kind of by chance in a difficult situation. Scotty just seems to always be around. So,
yeah. And I mean, you know, we never saw what the handover was between them. Right. Mm-hmm. Between the series and the sense of like Pike giving the reins over to Kirk. Mm-hmm. But almost in some ways, I think it would have been much more interesting to kind of have the series where that final season is actually about Kirk trying to assemble his command crew to take over as you're still seeing some adventures with that, you know, and maybe that's the place where you start to kind of like sprinkle in some of this. I just think they've jumped the gun on it. And it's again, I feel like it's just taken away from Strange New Worlds. You know, it's like, I would much rather get to spend time with somebody like Number One, with Lolan, or with somebody like Ortegas, you know, characters that only exist in this show. Because I feel like they actually deserve the screen time. They deserve the character growth time, because they only have so many seasons left, and then they'll be gone, right?
Yeah. I feel like they are going to do that with those two characters, though. It feels like they're setting them both up for character arcs this season of growing as people. Yeah.
I would definitely hope so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because Ortegas obviously goes through, you know, when it comes to them escaping big bags of goo, you know, she's the one who goes through the most on that orange ship and is left with kind of like, talk about trauma from it. Mm-hmm. And so that will be fascinating to see how she, you know, plays that out throughout the season. And then, of course, you have La'an going back into Gorn Hell and coming out the other side, but as an adult now, and does that help her actually become a more comfortable character in her own skin, because, you know, she's faced her demons and lived to tell about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, last quick question as we wrap up. I have to ask you, do you think they're done with the Gorn?
Well, I mean, the creators have said they're not, but...
But they just put them to sleep and said it's someone else's problem to deal with. So
I think that they should be. They should spend the rest of the seasons that they have left playing with their characters and allowing them to go on interesting adventures that allow us to get to know them more, so that then as we wrap up this series, I feel satisfied with the journey they've taken. And so I think in some ways less spectacle with something like the Gorn and more character-driven stories would be much more interesting to me. So yes, I do hope that they're done. Do you think they're done?
I think they're done with the conflict between the Federation and the Gorn hegemony. I feel like when Una says we've triggered a long hibernation in the Gorn, and Pike says, I can't help but wonder if we've just kicked the problem down the road, I think that the Gorn as active monsters flying around chasing our heroes, I think they're done with that. I think that there could still be some Gorn elements in terms of how the experience has impacted characters. And it could even have something to do, you know, I made the joke earlier about a nursery in sick bay with three little baby Gorn in there. I don't really think that's there, but who knows if there could still be some residual Gorn DNA in Battelle or something like that. So like there could be some Gorn elements to the story, but I don't think we're going to have this big war going on anymore.
Yeah. Gorn should done with the Gorn.
All right. Well, any final thoughts and what's your rating for this one?
Yeah, this episode is an incredibly mixed bag. You know, it's an incredibly, I don't even know if it's a half full bag of goo. and it was interesting because actually rewatching the episode today created a much more sour taste in my mouth than I had when I first watched it. And a big part of that was realizing how much of this episode felt like a rehash of better episodes.
Yeah.
And in that, I think I've just got to give this 2 out of 5 pustules of Gorn goo on Mattel's back.
Wow.
Don't pop those. No, you don't want that to happen.
Very graphic rating. Wow.
Yes. So that's how I feel about this episode, though. So yeah. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think a mixed bag is a good way to describe it. I think apart from the spinning that we talked about at the beginning, I think visually it's beautifully produced. Special effects are great. The set design is great. The costume design is great. I think the acting is excellent. I think the writing, it just feels like they didn't know how to resolve the story. And I really do. I felt it the first time, and then when I rewatched it, I felt it even more. Like I said, it feels kind of like a rehash of The Best of Both Worlds. Mm-hmm. And I think the writing doesn't live up to everything else in the production of the episode. So for that reason, I'm not a big fan of the story. Also, the fact that I'm just not a fan of the use of the Gorn like this at all, because it doesn't connect with who the Gorn are as we've known them or anything. So that hurts it a bit. So yeah, it's a mixed bag because, again, just outside of the writing from a creative standpoint, I think it's really well produced. I think they did a good job of connecting parts 1 and 2 after a long break. And I think we do get some good character stuff, mostly surrounding Pike and Battelle and Spock and Chapel. Like I said, I like Scotty. So I also like that they gave Mitchell a lot more to do in this episode. You know, they're obviously trying to highlight her. We'll see if that lasts. You know, is it going to be like Discovery, where every season in the first episode, all the bridge crew have all kinds of stuff to do and then they disappear again? Mm-hmm. I don't know. So we'll see. But I guess I'm going to give this one, I'll give it 6 hungry Gorn hatchlings.
Nice.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Hegemony Part 2 as well. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's a closed group. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So we do ask those questions and we do have those rules so that we can make sure that it is a group for listeners. But you'll see a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with fellow listeners and Matthew and me right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show and choose Saddle Up, and that'll come right on over to Matthew and me. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not just spinning your way down into the middle of a binary star system, where can people find you?
I hate that, Chris. It makes me feel a little bit nauseous, but you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, outside all the great Star Trek talk, you can find me doing the 602 Club, talking about all of those franchises we love outside of Star Trek. Of course, just a bunch of great big summer blockbusters we're talking about these days, like Superman and whatnot, so check all that out. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One is a completed show called Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, and then you'll find me on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars. But, Chris, when you're trying not to get splattered by Gorn juice, where can people find you?
Yeah, I hate that game, you know, those... I remember growing up in the 80s and we had those like paintball games.
It's the worst.
The Gorn juice version was just never popular. It's really disgusting. But yeah, when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you. As you mentioned, you can find me in many shows in the back catalog, and you can find me in social media. My username everywhere is C Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and all the other things that we're doing on the network going, all of our rewatches and such, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I'm going to snap my fingers, and we can zip off and talk about Wedding Bell Blues as we continue season 3.
Sounds good, Chris. Snap it.